Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio stations. And you're live with the best mind in Black America, me, Sean Williams, and this is the Cutting Edge Show. And my co-host is Justin Jackson.
How are we doing out there?
This evening, my guest is Carl Farrell. He is a candidate for Joliet Township Trustee, an active and engaged member of IUPAT Local 33. Carl has volunteered and assisted numerous politicians that support union labor. Carl is a member and former president of District Council 14, Young Lions Committee, an organization that's committed to social, community, and political volunteering. Carl is also a trustee for Joliet Painters Local 33, along with being a founding member of the newly organized Will County Democratic Black Caucus and Joliet Gatekeepers Community Empowerment and Mentoring Program. Carl is also a founding member of the Will County Chapter of Black Lives Matter. He's currently running for Joliet Township Trustee. Carl is a dedicated community activist with a keen interest in social and economic empowerment for distressed communities, as well as an advocate for equal education and opportunity. Welcome to the Cutting Edge.
It's an honor to be here.
Well, thank you for coming. Well, I have a two-part question for you. How are you doing, and how did you get involved with activism?
I'm doing great. I'm just taking it one day at a time and trying to really organize and strategize my steps, my movements. And I got involved, it hasn't been long, it was about 7 months ago. Matter of fact, yeah, it was June. It was June 30th, I believe. It was an incident out here in Joliet where there were these two young girls. They were sisters. They were 15 and 17. And so there was a lot of stuff that happened last year. Just to give a quick recap.
Okay, go ahead.
There was a guy. His name was Eric Lurie. He died in police custody in January. All right. So nothing else was pretty much said from that from January. And then we had George Floyd. And then after George Floyd. Then the Eric Lurie video surfaced that his family didn't know existed, right? So that was kind of, you know, outrageous. And so, and then with all that going on, so there were people taken to the streets protesting. There were these two young girls that were out protesting by themselves one day. And maybe about 100 yards from where they were protesting at, there was this guy, he had a stand where he sold Trump paraphernalia. And long story short, they ended up exchanging words. And he hit the girls with one of the flagpoles that was in his truck. He assaulted them, and he gave one of them a concussion. One of the sisters put her in the hospital. The other one had some contusions and stuff. And she had it all recorded on her phone. And you know, that was a little outrageous. They outraged me. And at that point, I'm like, man, I got to see what I can do to try to change the dynamic of what's going on.
Was there any charges filed on that gentleman?
You know what? I'm not exactly sure as of the charges that were filed on him or if they got dismissed anything, but I do know that they did take taxpayer money and put a police detail on that man's house.
Hmm.
She said he was scared something's going to happen to his house. So, yeah.
I mean, we're scared something's going to happen to our house all the time. I mean, that's the main reason why we're protesting, you know?
So. Yeah. I'm pretty sure if I hit him with a flagpole, I wouldn't have got a police detail on my house.
No, I think you. I don't think we'd be having a conversation right now, to be honest.
Probably would.
So, as a trustee, what is your goal? What is your goal in accomplishing there? Like I have looked up, you know, the duties of a trustee. I guess for the callers and listeners. You know, explain to them, you know, what it is that you are going to be doing and what it is that you're hoping to also help accomplish in that process.
Okay. So with this election, these positions that are on the ballot for this election are all the positions that deal with the finances of the city, township, or county government, right? So these positions have key roles in how the money is distributed and what it's distributed for. So it's programming that's already written to the duties of the township position. And so it's important that those programs, different assistance programs for the community, rental assistance or utility assistance, veterans housing assistance, just various, various things of that nature. It's very important that the community knows where to find those resources at, especially after this last almost year of this pandemic, because many people have been off work. People are in trouble right now. So a lot of people, they starting to lose their homes, and you know, utilities are getting cut off again. So my job as a trustee would to be to make sure that those programs are running according to plan, how they're supposed to run, and that the information, you know, for those programs are available to the public. Just make sure everybody can get the help that they need.
What challenges do you face as a black man entering into politics?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yes. What challenges do you face as a black man entering into politics?
Well, I mean, as a black man, we got the same challenges regardless of whatever we're doing. You know, we black men. So we always going to be looked at, scrutinized, and it's always, no matter how good we do it, you know, they can always say that we can do it better. You know, that we ourselves, like, no matter how phenomenal of a job that I do, if I did something right, it's always going to be looked at, you know, as like, yeah, it was okay. You know what I mean? It's never going to get the full credit that it deserves, but it's okay. You know, that's okay because we used to that. And so that's why we're not so great, you know. So it's easy. I mean, it's easy if you know what you're doing, if you understand, you know, self, if you understand yourself and, you know, saying the greatness that that being black, you know, it entails. Like, you know, I wake up, I feel great every morning, just knowing that, you know, I've been through so much already that's normal to us, but it's abnormal, you know. Really, you know, if you really look at it, you know, it's abnormal, but it's normal to us. So when we grow up and we go through the things that we go through, I just, the only challenges that I see is just, it's still just the color of my skin, where I come from, and that I might not talk, you know, the same way as certain people, that my body posture, you know, it might be different. I might be more relaxed because I'm not really worried about anything, you know, and I could just talk without having to, you know, go write down a script and study my words, because I'm going to talk from the heart. And so,
right.
You know, a lot of people, they don't like that. You know what I mean? They don't like that. They're not going to like that. And it's intimidating for them. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's just the same. I'm facing the same thing that I face every day, you know, waking up, being black, you know. I'm in the trade. So when I go to my jobs, and I'm a foreman for my company, so, like, when I go to the foreman's meetings at these different jobs, like, you know, I'm normally the only black foreman there. You know what I mean? So I say it's just everyday life. I'm kind of used to it, and I want to get away from that. I don't want this to be the norm. You know, I don't want to be where it's just one black guy out there. I want it to be where everybody understands, you know what I'm saying, their potential for excellence and what it's supposed to be, and not accept what we've been given.
Awesome.
Has race played a role in the political attitudes in Joliet?
Yeah. Just historically, you know, it's played a role everywhere. Everywhere, race is always an issue. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
After George Floyd, so it was a couple of protests out here, And one night specifically, the police are trying to shut it down, right? They're trying to shut the protest down. You know what happens when you try to shut the protest down. And so people got a little rowdy. And the end result ended up being the mayor who was an ex-police officer, he actually got into altercation with two of the guys that were protesting because, you know, he was telling them, you know, basically, you know, get off the street. And they were kind of like, who are you? Are you just another citizen? Like, you got on regular clothes, there's no markers, or who are you? So they ended up getting into altercation. And as soon as the mayor touched the guys, like eight police officers, you know, grabbed those real bad, right, put them in the hospital. And then they charged them with assault and battery on the police. Mm. So the police that was there, the chief and his deputy chief at the time, and these are the same guys who knew that the video of Eric Lurie, who I mentioned earlier, they knew that that video was there, and they never, you know, they didn't say anything either, right? And so you have that happening. So this is the kind of police department we're dealing with, right? And right. That's a part of politics. You know what I mean? That's a huge part of politics, right? Because the people who you elect, they have the city officials who you elect, you know, especially on the city council, the city manager, they have a huge role with the police, with the disciplinary action that's handed out to the police. And so, long story short, you know, we as a community worked together, and we got rid of that chief, and we got rid of those deputy chiefs, and we have now the most diverse police department administration that this city has ever seen. We got two black deputy chiefs, and a woman as chief. You know, so. But yeah, so and with that being said, you can already see the changes. It was an incident out here, a police involved shooting already. It was two. It was one in December, one in January. But the way that they were handled, the level of transparency in them, you know, it was a little bit different than how it had been with the former administration. So,
and I guess you know, for some of the critics that's out there, you know, I mean, obviously, I know you talked about that story with the Trump supporter, with those two girls, those two sisters, you know. So you do have, you know, a different thought process that's out there. What do you say to those people who think that, you know, the crime, the black on black crime is what they always try to jump to whenever we're talking about progress? Because, I mean, for you and I, you know, we can see like, hey, I mean, yeah, there's black on black crime. Yeah, there's white on white crime, you know, but at the end of the day, those who are policing us are supposed to follow, you know, some type of rules and guidelines. What do you say to like some, yeah, what do you say to those type of critics that's out there that, you know, don't get it, that don't understand?
Well, I would say to them, first and foremost, to become properly educated, and I would suggest that they look up the history of the last, just not even the whole history, full history of this country, but I want them to look up the history of the last 60 years, and I want them to find out what redlining is. I want them to find out what systemic racism, what that entails. And I want them to have understanding of that. And then I want them to come back and you know what I'm saying, talk to me about black-on-black crime, which I don't – it's no such thing as black-on-black crime. Crime is just crime, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you could – most people who commit crimes commit it in the neighborhood that they're comfortable with or, you know, where they're at. And most of the time it's going to be people that look like them where they live, right? Especially in a city that's segregated in Chicago, right? It's not a lot of super mixed neighborhoods. Most of the time – even if you go in Evergreen Park, like Evergreen Park is slightly mixed, but it's still mostly white in between Western and Dane. You know what I mean? But then right on the outside of that, you know what I mean? You right back into the hood. So Chicago is still very, very segregated. So like wherever you at and somebody commits a crime, more than likely it's going to be against somebody who looks, you know, like them. So I don't believe in black on black crime is just crime, but I do believe and I understand that the way things are and things are by design. It's not like is just like this for a reason. You know, it's a reason why the education in the city is poor than education in other areas, you know, outside of the city, where people don't look as much like the people in the urban community, you know.
And we do have a caller, 8051. I believe they have like a question or comment that they might have. 8051, can you hear us?
Yes. I have a question. Like, I hear the gentleman is an activist. Do you think it's also necessary to be an activist on your job, even though it doesn't concern a lot of black people? Like, well, I work, that's only me as a black woman and one of a guy, maybe out of like 60 something, a black guy out of 6 employees. Mm-hmm. And I find that I'm all the time having to file grievances outside of my union because the union don't really protect me on my job. I have to protect me on my job because they don't understand really what racism is. So when I have problems and they're dealing with racism, I file a grievance. And I've even had one committee person to remove himself totally as a committee person of the union because he had to defend my case. I wrote my own case up, but he had to put it into force. And he resigned after that because I was filing a discrimination charge against the company.
So what's your question? I'm sorry.
You know, he's talking about mostly activists for a group of people, but sometimes it's also necessary to be an activist right where you are.
Yeah, it's always necessary. I mean, like, so everything that you're doing, I mean, that's necessary because you have to get your point across, right? You have to. They got to understand that, like, you're gonna stand up for your rights. So yeah, no, I mean, and that's kind of like with what I was saying when she asked me when she was asking about what problems do I think I would face? Do I face, you know, in the political arena? And I'm saying the same problems every day, no matter where you at. You know, you wake up and you black, and you're gonna have, you know what I'm saying, a lot of times you're gonna have issues. You're gonna come across people who are super ignorant, and you know, you have to find a way to deal with that. And that's being an activist. Every day that you're fighting for your right, you know, you're activist. And so, yeah, I feel like that's necessary. I feel like it's necessary to teach
our
children that.
I do have a question for you.
Okay.
I've been on my job for 19 years. They have not hired a black person in 19 years. And they just recently, while I was off on medical leave, hired 4 more people, but in between the 19 years and 4 more, I think they've hired about 10 new employees within that 19 years. Most of the people at my job, they stay 40 and 44 years. But how can I go about stopping what they're doing or even fouling anything? Who should I foul with? EEOC or?
Yeah, I would. If you have an EEOC that's active out there, I would contact them. If your NAACP is active out there, I would contact them.
I can't.
If you have a.
Oh, I can't. Our NAACP don't work like that. I have little faith in the NAACP because they don't rock the boat at all in my area. They do not.
You get in that more and more places. So I understand exactly what you're saying. But I'm just saying they have the resources. So even if they don't, they should have the resources. Like if you know somebody in their office, so you could talk to their president, their vice president, their chapter out there, they should have some resources. And if they don't, reach out to the Black Lives Matter chapter out there. If they have if they have a chapter out there, everybody reach out to them, or like any community based organization that for equity of us, for our equity, for our gain of equity, and whether it be with jobs or financially, like anything, anybody who's for it, like reach out to them. And if you can't find anybody to reach out to, I mean, where are you at? Like, what state are you in?
I'm in Illinois. I'm in Southern Illinois. I'll say
you're
Marion, Illinois. I'm in Marion, Illinois.
That's Trump City. That's Trump country down there. Just to jump in a little bit.
Voted for Trump.
Yeah.
Except
right.
Me and the black guy. Yeah.
What I would say to you, just to jump in a little bit. I know at my job personally, my job have done a better job. Obviously, I'm in the DMV area near DC. My job has done a better job of trying to promote diversity and things of that nature. What I would say to you though is that everyone at the end of the day is always going to look at their bottom line, right? They're going to look at how much money can this make me? One of the things that you can do for yourself, if you really want to help promote diversity inside of the workplace and help, promote blacks getting hired there, is to, one, look up different types of grants that companies can receive, different types of tax cuts and that companies can receive in your area for diversity, and bring that to the attention of management. When you bring it in as a bottom line, as money, like, hey, here's another way you can, save some extra money. People, regardless of, if they're racist, if they're not racist, whether they're Democrat or they're Republican, regardless of, any their background, when you're talking about bringing in money to be put back into their pocket, they're going to listen. They're going to at least have a hear of it. So I think one of the things that we have to do, especially in the area of Marion, because I've been there, I lived there, I worked at a company there where it was the exact same way. And one of the things that, we have to do is look to see how can, one, we do this to help, one, bring money into the company, two, prop the company up and make sure we're presenting it in a manner where it shows the significance of it. Because at the end of the day, Illinois is a right to work, like they can fire you for no reason. Right. Which I don't agree with, I think, politically we have to, I don't believe in that right to work. I don't believe in a company having that much power. I think more power needs to be put into the working class.
My company don't have that power.
What do you mean?
My company don't have that power. Because
you got
that
union.
You
have a union. But if your union don't back you, they do have that power. That's the thing. Like when you're talking about the union not backing you, if the same people sitting on the union board agrees with the same people that's in a corporation, then they're in the same boat.
When I brought to their attention that I do not have to go through my union, you don't have to go through a local union. I told them I can go directly to the district or higher up. I do not have to put a grievance in with them. And when they found that out, they looked at me a little differently. I told them I really didn't need them at all. But I like to, I like to go through the proper channels. But I have forced them where they didn't have a choice. And when Trump lost the election, probably half of them wouldn't speak to me anymore. I really didn't care. But I just want to do something about their hiring practices.
What I would say is, do some investigating research and see if there is discrimination within the hiring process. Because if you can find that and have evidence of that, you can bring that force in a class action lawsuit.
That's what, see, around in Southern Illinois, it's hard to get a lawyer for discrimination. I had a lawyer take several of us on, and she took our deposition and everything, and we told her to find out if she had, you know, she didn't have anything to do with Illinois tool workers, because that's the company I work for. And she said no. But after she took our deposition, she came back to all of us and said, I can't take your case. And I felt like evidently what the HR for my company at the time, his daughter was over the law school at SIU. So she probably found out that her dad was HR and dropped the case. And it's hard to get a lawyer in this area.
Well, yeah, she wouldn't be able to do that because of conflict of interest.
Right. She didn't have, she said she didn't have a conflict of interest, but after she got all the information, she did. So
right.
That let me know she knew from the get go that she had.
Did you ask her if she had any recommendations?
She was recommended to me by the.
No, I mean, like when she said that she couldn't take your case. Right, when she said she couldn't take your case.
No, she didn't. She didn't recommend nobody else. And she didn't give a reason either why she couldn't take the case. She said she just couldn't.
Sometimes you got to try to. Well, she was from that. She was also from Mary.
Pardon? No, she was from Carbondale.
How far
same area, same area, same area, same
got,
area, same area.
And I got her through the NAACP.
So you might have to reach out.
And she
like
was,
sometimes you gotta reach out fast that little network.
Yeah, right,
you know?
Now I'm hoping to get one out of the Chicago area because it's hard to find one in Southern Illinois that'll take a discrimination case against any company around here.
I mean, I will say this, as a person who studied a little bit of law, I haven't went to law school, but I have studied law in my undergrad. A discrimination case is very, very hard. It's a very, very hard case to win. I mean, unfortunately, I don't think it should be, but like, unfortunately, you know, that is the circumstances. And so a lot of times when you are coming to these lawyers, you have to come to them with, you know, evidence already ready to go.
Documentation,
like, a lot of times you,
is your best.
Yeah,
documentation,
evidence. Like, you have to be the lawyer. You got to do all the work yourself. You know, where we're thinking, you know, this is what I pay you for. You know, a lot of times, you know, we are the ones who are happen to, you know, take that action and actually, you know, treat ourselves as we're lawyers. And for all the callers that's out there, you know, feel free. Press one, come in, ask a question or give your comment. I just want to make sure I got that out there. But go ahead with your comment or question, caller. You still there, caller? 8051.
You talking to me?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. But I was basis. That's all I wanted to know. What was the best avenue? And like I know, no company, not in nobody wants you to file a claim with the EEOC. Even if you lose, they don't like it on their, as I say, their resume as a business. So we're going to do it both ways. Soon as we get this lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, with the when you file EEOC, you know that's documented. So, like, let's say even if you lose the case, let's say 5 years from now, someone else says the same thing. Let's say they lose the case five, 10 years down the road, someone else comes in and does this, and files the same thing. At that point, it shows repetition. That's why companies definitely hate that, is because at the end of the day, it's like, well, you know, now it's a repeated pattern. you know, maybe those first three people, you know, didn't get a lot of, you know, ground way. But the thing is that it doesn't just disappear. It doesn't just go away.
Well, see, they know how I feel because they would love for me to retire because of my age. And I told them I will sue them for mentioning my age, too. And there's only two of us. The guy is going to retire this year. And I told him I refuse. I will not retire until they change their hiring practices and hire blacks. And that'll leave me as the only black person after this year. I'll be the only black person in that company.
And I
know that they're just waiting to see if I retire next year, and they will not hire a black person. It'll be all white.
There's no other ethics board like down south. It got to be somebody.
One of the things I can say, though, you know, as a strategic method, you know, if they are an all-white company, the next black person that comes in to interview, you know, is going to have strong cause for discrimination for the simple fact that there is an all-white. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that, like, when you are the only black or they're only two black, a lot of times they call those the token Negroes. You know, where it's like, hey, you can't say we're discriminating because
never,
we do have a couple black.
They would never,
you know,
they would never use me as their token Negro. They use me as the person they want to get rid of, because we had a young lady had all kind of qualifications who could have been our plant manager, and when she had the best resume, they took it off market and decided to hire within. They promoted an engineer to a plant manager to keep from hiring this black girl. And she was way caught. She was overqualified for the job.
So when they deny somebody a job, do they have to get them calls as to why?
The calls was they decided to hire within the company, in-house. They call it in-house hiring, and they can do that.
Right, so like he was saying with the class action, because I mean that's discrimination right there. She was the most qualified person, and she was still more qualified than the person who was in house, right?
Yes, she was. See, we're a marketing and an ink company, and she had her degree in chemistry, and she was an engineer, so she could have done everything, you know, overseen everything that we produce.
Okay,
well, yeah,
thank you.
Awesome. And then, Michelle, did you have any questions or follow-ups?
Yes, I do. Carl, I wanted to ask you about some of the organizations that you are with. Can you tell me about them?
Yeah. Okay, so I'll start with Gatekeepers.
Okay.
Gatekeepers is a mentoring program that we have for men. Right now, well, our first class, we have a curriculum. We have an 8-week curriculum, and doing that curriculum, we basically just go over things, financial literacy, different ways to strengthen yourself as a man, different ways to find outputs for, you know, and replace negativity with positivity and ways to strengthen your family. As we evolve this program, like we're gonna start having different and we network and get more resources. We're starting to have different career trainings, different things, you know, that we're going to implement into this program. And it's still the basis of the program is to grow our men into leaders, you know, from young men or just from men, period, into leaders, and to make sure they have the leadership quality to lead their household, you know, and their community. So that's,
I got a
that's
question.
What gatekeepers do.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to just say, I mean, I did have a question for you, you know, just for like, you know, for the listeners that's out there, and also a personal question for me is, you know, is one, how did you get into politics? You know, like, you know, I know a lot of people, including even myself, you know, who has a strong interest into politics and running for office, but just don't know, you know, how to what the steps to take. You know, what do you recommend to people like that? And like, what are the appropriate steps to take to, you know, one, get into politics, and also two, you know, running for office, running for an office?
I didn't know. I actually was just doing things to try to better the community and make some changes out here, man, and help the organizations who are like seeking for change within the police department and things like that. So I was just doing activist work, and I got approached by some of the people who were with, you know, political organizations, and they asked me to run on the slate with them, you know, because they felt like we together as a team, you know, could make a great amount of change. I would suggest that, like, for anybody who if they want to get in politics, first just study up on what they want to do, and then network. Reach out and network when it's time for people to run their campaign. Volunteer, give some of your time so that you can get to know these people, you know, and get to know those circles that you eventually want to be part of. I really feel like that's probably the best way. Because if you volunteer your time, if you want to be a politician, right, if you're not doing, like I say, activist work for things within the community, that's kind of important, too. You also need to ground yourself with the community so you'll know what's going on in the community. Because as a politician, you're a voice. They're electing you to be a voice, some kind of voice. So you can't be a voice for the people if you don't even know the people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, after you establish those relationships with the people, whatever kind of politician you're trying to be, I would suggest you just volunteer time and get to know those people, get to know those roles, and eventually everything will fall into place.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about the Will County Democratic Black Caucus.
Black Caucus, yeah.
Yes. So what's going on with you all with that?
So that is really taking form. We started the Black Caucus, I think officially in like September.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we ended up getting everything together by like September, and we started to get recognized out here, and so our thing is just to make sure that we have the proper voice. You know, I'm the legislative chair for the Black Caucus. And so it's a learning experience for me too, because you know I've never done this, you know, this kind of stuff like that. So, you know, I got to learn. I'm trying to get my contact, get my network together so that any legislation is passed, so I know it, right? So I need to know the right people to know who's trying to pass things, and then I need to know what gets passed, and I need to understand it. So one of the first pieces of legislation that I had a chance to really sit down and like read and try to understand what the 3653 House bill, the one that for the change for the mandated body cams for Illinois and did some other things of that nature. And yeah, I never thought that'd be my thing, but you know, I like information, I like knowledge, so yeah, so it's okay. But yeah, that's what the Black Caucus doing. We just trying to make sure that we had the proper voice, you know, at the table. Make sure that we heard, that our people get heard.
Did you ever think that you would be into politics before? Like,
I never ever thought like, yeah, I'd be into politics. It just wasn't my thing, you know. Wasn't my thing. So, you know, I'm just like everybody else, you know, especially somebody from the inner city. So I'm from the south side, and when I grew up, when I was like 15, And then my mom, she moved out to Joliet. Then we just I bounced back and forth from Joliet to Chicago from like 1995 to 2009. I've been out here for the last 9 years straight, but I always bounce around. And so politics definitely wasn't in my. I never thought, you know, I'd be doing anything political.
I want to ask you how did the war on drugs affect the black community in your area?
So that's a big thing, right? This is kind of a complicated answer, right? Because it did so much. As you know, as most people should know, there has always been a war on the black family, right? It's always
mm-hmm.
right, since slavery, right? So they figured out that, like, man, these slaves, they kind of stick together. You know what? What gave them strength to be able to endure? You know, all this horrible things that we do to them. What gave them strength to be able to do this? But it was the family unit, right? They kept
right.
the slaves strong. So when they started separating the family, they figured out you could break the family. You break the family. But the first thing you got to do to break the family is break the father, break the leader, the protector of that family. So, you know, that's why all that buck breaking stuff came in, and all the sick, sadistic
right.
stuff they were doing slavery, right? So even
right.
after slavery, up into the 40s, when they started having governmental assistance programs, the goal was to replace the men in the house. Right, it's always been an attack on the family. The war on drugs, it really destroyed the family unit, because it took a lot of men away from our community. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that if somebody commits a crime, you know, whether it be whatever their color, that they don't deserve you know, discipline.
But I want you to hold that thought for a second. But I want you to continue though. But shouldn't it also been a crime, because the government did put all these drugs in the black community?
Right, and so that's what I'm saying. Like, it got to be a level playing field, though, right? So
right.
if they consider something a crime for us, it got to be the same equal crime for somebody else. So it can't be situations where, like, in the inner city, you have a kid 17, especially in the 90s. It's a kid, he's 17, he get caught, he might be, you know, he lost, he don't know his way, or he think he know his way, and he's trying to do whatever he got to do to get make some money or to eat or survive or whatever, right? And he get caught, get a simple possession charge, right? It's a simple possession charge, really, which in a suburb or somewhere else would be like a misdemeanor possession. But because this kid is in the city, you know, and he black or he Latino, and they charge him with a felony, you know, like a low class felony, right? I forgot how it. I can't remember if the class one or class four was the higher felony, but they charge him one of those felonies, and it's a totally different charge than the kid in the suburb, because the kid in the suburb gets a slap on the wrist, he gets a misdemeanor that's not on his record. You know, next year when he turns 18. And he wants to go to college, he can go pick his school that he want to go to. He can go get his job because there's nothing on his record. But that black kid, that Latino kid with that slap on the wrist that was for the same crime they got charged that felony, that's going to affect them going to different colleges, right? That's going to affect them
right.
going to the military if they wanted to do that. That's going to affect the jobs that they can get. It's going to affect everything. It's going to affect their whole life. So... yeah, so that's how. So the war on drugs not only disproportionately got a lot of our men off the streets, but with the absence of our men, the household, you know, is like it got even more disarray. Over the last 30 years, like this last 30 years has been really, really significant. You know, especially for the black family, like you see divorces rampant now. It's a lot of things in the black community that weren't there, you know what I mean, that we kept out of the community, that they're not, you know. And a lot of that is just it's a lack of leadership. It's for a lack of the men being there. I mean, even if you look at the streets, like even if you look at the streets wild. They wild now. They wild because it's like it's not the same kind of leadership. It's not the same kind of structure that used to be out there. So it's a little different right now, you know, than how it used to be. And that it's just all the way around. It's evident, you know. So yeah, that's the war on drugs. It really hurt us. It really hurt our community a lot. So now they're trying to make it right by legalizing marijuana and throwing out people's weed records if they got caught they had marijuana charges, and taking money from the marijuana taxes and putting it back into the community. But that's not real reparations, and that's not a real way to fix it. You can never fix that, you know. But it's a start, I guess. You know, so out here it's a couple of organizations out here, out this way, that we're trying to write resolutions to make sure that they receive what's left of the marijuana tax money, because most of it isn't allocated, but there are little parts of it that, you know, people can still try to get. And I still don't think in Illinois there's any black dispensaries, black-owned dispensaries, or growers, or manufacturers either. So I don't know if I answered the question, but
oh, you answered. Do you think that there will ever be a level playing field for us? Because, you know, they can't operate with no level playing field with us anyway, because then they wouldn't be able to compete.
I think if we started right now today, right, and we raised the awareness of everybody that was next to you, if every day you turn to somebody and you talk to them, and at the end of that day they understood everything that you understood and the way you understood, as far as being awoke, being woke about yourself and the power of our people and the power of yourself and knowing that you a king or a queen, right? I think that if every day we did that and it got to the households and everybody who you reach somebody else every day, I think in 15 to 30 years, I think we will have if not even almost even playing field. It's going to take time because there's been so much time destroying them. It's going to take a lot of time building us up. And but I think if we did it right now, like if we had more years like this year, because this year was kind of eye-opening for a lot of people. And if a lot of those people who were riding that wave really got some kind of knowledge out of it, then, I think like 15 years, man, you'll start really seeing change. But first, more people have to start understanding who they really are. And we were talking about this the other day, and with the gatekeepers, we were talking about this, and one of the things that I was saying was that instilled in us, right, that slavery, when people talk about slave mentality, it's so much more than just not, like, you know, wanting to see somebody else, you know, do better than you, or, you know, being a bootlicker. It's a lot more to it, right? So as slaves, we accepted less, you know, because that's what we were given. We were given the chitlins, the hindquarters, the throwaway, the scraps, and that's what we survived off of, right? And that's a whole mentality. Right. That we still had that mentality, right? So our people accept the less without even knowing or realizing that they accepting the less, because it's just normalized to us. And until we understand, more people understand where that comes from and how that frame of thinking, you know, what it actually means, then it's gonna be hard to get people to value, you know what I'm saying, their own life and their neighbor's life. Because we used to accept them the less. I don't know if that makes sense the way I just said it, but you know what I'm saying?
I mean,
if you think about
sense.
It, like, yeah, like that's what our people do. We accept the less. That's why it's so easy for, like, when I was younger and the police, we knew at 3 o'clock, shift change, the new shift of the dick boys, they're going to come, they're going to bust us down. If we outside, I'm not even saying we're doing nothing. These just kids outside, we outside at the park playing basketball. They're going to drive their cars all up on the basketball court. They're going to throw us on the car. It's hot. They're going to throw us on that hood of the car. And, you know what I'm saying? They basically abusing us, right? But we accept it because it's normal. It's normal to us. We like, oh, that just happens. That just happens. That, but that, that just doesn't, that doesn't just happen in every community. You know, people accept that because it's normalized and that's what we're used to, because that's our frame of thought. And that frame of thought is part of slave mentality. That's still there. Accepting the less. It'll be okay. You know what I mean? It'll be all right. Just, you know, make sure you're straight. That's, that's, it's not right. So we got to get rid of that way of thinking. And once we get rid of that way of thinking, then people will stop normalizing things like a lot of the stuff that's going on outside. You know what I'm saying? It's not normal for a 15-year-old to, you know what I'm saying, murder three or four people. And it's all this on camera. You know what I mean? Now, like, it's not normal, but it's normalized. You know, so.
Yeah. No, that, well, I mean, I think that makes perfect sense. We do have a caller who has a question or comment. 5240. Did you have a question or comment?
I just want to say that the young man is spot on, and I'm enjoying the show tonight. But he's right, you know what I mean? It's just growing up that you know, African Americans expect certain things. So when you keep doing it, we just keep expecting that over and over and over, because this is you know, just something that's going on. So I'm just want to say good content and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Did you have any questions for the caller?
Yes, I just one quick you know, question. You know, sometimes I get into it with, you know, Mr. Jackson. We have this thing because I've always said that African Americans force us working together. I still say, is there any way that you ever think that African Americans can work together without getting jealous, without getting envy? Because that's something that we've been prone to do too, hundreds of years later. Do you ever see African Americans where every man can get rich, every man can get on with African Americans wanting to shoot you or kill you because you live in battle, you put in the hustle, you got educated? This I want to say is, you know, and I know me and Jackson have one thing that we disagree on. He believes that African Americans, we're going to get together, we can work it. I say they don't. I say we're going to backstab each other, we're going to get jealous, we're going to kill and steal to get ahead of each other. That's the question for the caller tonight.
I mean, knowledge is power, right? So if you know better, you know what I'm saying? If you knew better, you do better, right? So, yeah, I mean, of course, man, it can get to the point, and that's part of everything I was just saying. Like, once people understand, like, who they truly are, we can get rid of that. We can get rid of that old way of thinking. That old way of thinking, it burdens us, man. It holds us in a state, man, like a complacency. You know what I mean? And it's done that for so long. But it's possible. I mean, it's happened before. I mean, everything that happened right after slavery, man. You had all the black farmers trying to form unions. You had, you know what I'm saying, all these beautiful black neighborhoods that had their own money. And it wasn't just Black Wall Street. You know, it was a Black Wall Street in every city, right? Every major city. Every single major city had their own Black Wall Street. You know, so that's we gotta learn the knowledge of ourselves. We gotta learn the hidden history that they have from us. And then once people understand that, if they can attain that knowledge with understanding and turn it into wisdom, then man, it'll be totally different out here. It'll be totally different. We won't be trying to accept the less. You know?
I just want to ask you a quick question. I mean, honestly, you know, you know well as I know, and I know you're a smart brother, but what I'm saying is it's more easier said than done, because African Americans get so excited and we'll get so much foolishness. It's like if you go on, whether it's Twitter, whatever these accounts, whatever you notice on social media, if you put something stupid and silly it'll get 100,000 likes. But if you put something, I've seen brothers put stuff on there that's educated, that how we can get money and all that, and then you look, it's 3,000 likes or whatever, 3,000-4,000. But when something stupid come on with us doing something silly, it's 60,000 likes, 70,000. I mean, until we get our mind right, until we get our mind to say, hey, you know what I mean, let's not deal with that foolishness. I'm saying it's just like, I'm just saying, man, it's easier said than done. I hear what you're saying. I understand it. But if you was on social media and you was going to say that, you wouldn't get that many likes. But if you go do something stupid and silly, they'll love you for it. That's all I'm saying, brother. But you're doing a good job. I just wish everybody out there would just hear more.
Now, I get what you're saying, but this what I want to say to that, man. It's okay, so like out here in this town, I mean, out here in Joliet, right, it's been a significant amount of change within the last 6 months, right? And it hasn't been a whole bunch of people. It only took a handful of people that realized that, like, this could happen because, you know what I'm saying, it's possible, right? And a handful of people with a little bit of information, and it went a long way, right? But also something else, well, I can't even just say with our people, but with just people in general, people like to see, you know what I'm saying? They like to see. It's like everybody from Missouri, you got to show me, right? So now that people see.
Show me, stay.
That we made change. Yeah. People see that we made some change. It's going to be more people, you know what I'm saying, trying to help make change, right? Because they saw it happen already. And so that's all it takes, man. It just starts with a few. But a few people, so a few brilliant minds, man, just a few dedicated minds could start a whole tidal wave, man, that could just change everything. You know, so
yeah.
Take a few people. You can't, don't give up hope on our people because, but that's all people. Everybody likes them saying more than they like. You know what I'm saying? That's the average person. So the goal is to, like you said, we got to get our people away from the average way of thinking and help them understand that, like, it's nothing average about our life. You know what I'm saying? And when they understand that, and when they can see it be for real, you know what I'm saying? When they see that everybody could be a Jay Morrison, everybody could be a Derrick Great, you know what I'm saying? And when they see everybody could be an independent, brilliant millionaire, then without being an entertainer, you know what I'm saying? When they start seeing more of that, like, then it'll be believable. You know what I'm saying? So it just takes more people to follow themselves. It's going to start with a small group, but that small group will grow. You know?
Okay. Well, I like that, man. And I just want to say you're doing a good job, man. Just keep up the good work.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
And then I guess, you know, even just moving forward off of that note there, you know, obviously you in Joliet, I mean, there is a lot of crime and there is, you know, a lot of things that needs to be done to not just, you know, prop up the black community, but also, like you said, when they took the black man out of the home, you know, a lot of stuff needs to be done there. I know for me, what I see a lot of times is like what we've been talking about all night, you know, when we look at the college scandal, you know, we have a woman who literally pled not guilty. Not just pled not guilty. I mean, the fact that she pled not guilty doesn't even matter. But she took her money and used money laundering, bribery, to get her child into college and got 2 weeks. She went to trial and was found guilty and got 2 weeks. Like that's pretty much like being grounded. You know, for me, like, hey, are you grounded for 2 weeks? Give me your phone. You know, 2 weeks. But, we, you know, in a black community, we see where, you know, oh, you were outside. We found some marijuana. We're going to give you 5 years. Or we want you on probation for the next 15 years. Or we want you on parole for this and that and the other. And so, like, you know, that need to, you know, have some type of equilibrium, you know, in the justice system. Because, like, now, you know, we have opioids and methamphetamines that are ravaging through the white communities. And now it's like, oh, this should be a health issue. We shouldn't throw these people in jail. You know, and we need to get these people help. It's like, well, what about that help when it was in the crack? Like when crack hit, it was like, you know what you're doing. You knew better. Lock them up. You know, lock her up.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, how do we? Like, I'm gonna be honest. Like, I guess some people would consider me to be extreme. You know, but I'm like, hey, do what they do to us. You know, like, that's how I see it. Like, no, forget that playing nice. And, hey, because it's considered a health issue now, you know, we need to consider it a health issue throughout the entire spectrum. I'm like, no, that's I'm more on the side of fighting back. Like, you know, forget the health issue. Give that person 15 years. No, that's take the next 100 years and ravish the white community with the drugs just the way they ravish the black community. What are your thought processes?
But you know what they do? What they do to us for real, that like people don't even pay attention to. They understand these elections and they get out and vote. They understand elections, they get out and vote. You can vote as good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They know who they vote in and they know who they vote out. And that's what they do. And so when they do that, like even though it's crazy, that part right there, it's crazy. A lot of stuff that happened is crazy and it's systemic. But that part right there, like, we could change that. Like, the black vote is so powerful. And that's why they try to make sure that they keep it quiet. You know what I mean? They don't want us to be aware of knowing that, like, man, we could put our people in there to control that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? They don't want us to know that. This 2021, and I'm going around canvassing right now, right? And people, when I get to their door, people who have no idea that it's an election in April, they have no idea. And I'm like, man, that's crazy, because this is the one, this is the election that, these are the elections that control where all the funds are allocated to in the city. Like, the money that could be there for programs for your children, the money that could be there to help your granny when she can't pay her bills. Like, these are the elections for the important stuff that's right around you that you can control. You could see it. It's an actual real thing because you could see it. This is not talk from TV. This is not some politician in Washington. These are people that you know. You know what I mean? These are things that you can see. And, yeah, it's a lot of people who don't have that knowledge. So, I mean, like, we got to raise the awareness so people can understand that, like, a lot of the stuff that's going on historically has been going on. But there are things that are going on that we can change. And we got to start changing the things that we can first. You know what I mean? Then go for it. But I hear you. I hear you. Yeah,
you
say pumping in their neighborhoods for
100
years, like they did us, man. I hear you. But
yeah, I mean, you know, like, my thing is, you know, like, people always say, you know, you can't fight fire with fire, and I'm just like, why not? I mean, because the reality, you know, but my thing is, the reality, you can, you know, and if we were to take that concept right there and put it into actual practical terms. There are actual fires that are started to actually fight other fires. That's burn this part of the land so the fire can't spread any further. You know, like, you actually can fight fire with fire, you know, and it's like, don't be, in my mindset, I'm like, you know, don't be afraid to fight fire with fire. Forget all, because, like, I mean, if you want an equal playing field, the only way you can get an equal playing field, because the wealthy is not going to give you the money. The wealthy is not going to give you the power.
No.
You know, like, you got to take it. You know,
yeah, you
like,
got to take. Nobody ever relinquishes power. Nobody relinquishes power, right?
Yeah.
But,
you know,
I like how Fred Hampton said it best, though, right, to me. Because I love the thing Fred Hampton was doing. He was so young. He was so powerful.
Yeah,
but
yeah. That was a brother
Fred
we shouldn't have lost.
We shouldn't have. He said, we got to face the fact that some people say you fight fire best with fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to fight fire with fire. We're going to fight fire with water better. We're going to fight racism, not with racism, but we're going to fight with solidarity. We say we're not going to fight capitalism with black capitalism, but we're going to fight it with socialism. You know what I mean? It's an answer for everything. It's a yin for every yang, right? So the first thing, though, you know, so I keep going to this, man, is that, man, people have to be informed. They have to have that knowledge of self, and they got to know where we come from and where we could go. Because most people don't even understand like the way the world works.
But how do we inform people when today's society, you know, everything is about that 15 minutes of fame. Everything is about, you know, like when we're talking about real substance and stuff that matters, you know, people, you know, don't want to hear that. You know, like they say the three things you don't talk about. Three things you don't talk about:
religion,
money,
politics.
And politics. And I'm like, that's crazy. Yeah. To me, those are the three things you're supposed to be talking about. You know, like those are three things that are very important. You know, why do we not talk about those things? You know, so like, I guess, you know, for the listeners, you know, what would you say? Like, how do you, what is something that you will present in a, as a matter of how we can not only inform, but also educate, and then lastly, inspire people to action?
I use examples, right? Like, so out here, out this way, I use the example when I'm talking to people a lot of like Kyle Rittenhouse. Kyle Rittenhouse, who was out on bond after he murdered two people at a protest, shot a third person, right? Shot three people, murdered two, and two of them died, right? At a protest, at a Black Lives Matter protest in Wisconsin after Blake got shot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they gave, after they played a round, they gave Kyle Rittenhouse a $2 million bond, which was raised. And, like, right now, they don't know what Kyle Rittenhouse is, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I got some people out here who I've known for a while. One of the guys I've known for a while, he shot three people in self-defense. None of them died. All the people he shot were alive. But it was self-defense. And because of his background, they gave him a $5 million bond.
Mm.
No one died. You know what I mean? Kyle Rittenhouse murdered two people when he was somewhere he wasn't supposed to be.
He went to a bar with his mother to have drinks.
Yeah. You know
what
I'm saying?
You know?
So I use
he's not even
like 21. That to motivate people. Right. He only 18. Or 17.
You know?
Might only be 17. But
I think he just turned 18.
Do we have 1633 or in a call? Because I got another call I need to bring in.
1633, yes. 1633,
okay.
1633, we got you on the air.
Yes, I'm a citizen of Joliet, and I wanted to ask Carl. First of all, I want to say this has been a very informative show tonight. And I want to ask him, what is the single most important need of the Joliet community in his aspect, and how will he be able to address that need?
I feel like one of the greatest needs in the community is we have to lead and model being better and push back against negativity. You know, I think that's true, right? And that goes kind of like hand in hand with what I was speaking on as far as like being informed and educating, you know, finding the right kind of education and taking that knowledge in and educating yourself on certain things, because if you know better, you do better. And so it's a lot of things that are out here as the caller had called it, because it's kind of like it's a big city, but it's kind of a small town, right? So everybody kind of know each other, and so it's a lot of like backbiting and stuff that's going on out here. Right, it's a lot of things that are so minute or minuscule when it comes to the overall aspect of the world and the things that's going on in the world, and so that turns into people accepting, you know, the lesser gear and paying attention to things that don't even matter. When we're supposed to be finding ways to create generational wealth for our children, we're supposed to be finding ways to grow and repair our communities, right? We should have it. We got to find ways to have it, you know, in our heart for us to want to see our neighbors do as good as we doing. And so all that, all that is like, for some people, that would be a big change. For me, I always was the type of person that I like helping people. You know, I'm not really, everybody's selfish to an extent, but, you know, and I like helping people, and I like seeing the people around me win. And, like, that's going to be the thing. Like, you know, I just keep sacrificing, you know, my time, what time I can, and trying to help build and open people's eyes, man, and their hearts out here so that they could, you know, want to be part of the change. And the only way you're going to bring change is to change. You know what I mean? That's the only way you can do it. So, yeah, so that's what I think. I think that's what's important for the community to basically the lead set better examples. You know, we need more men, more positive men, you know, out in the forefront. We need people to see that there are positive men out here, to remove all the rhetoric that's out here, you know, dealing with the black community, you know, the bad images and the way they portray us, you know. So we got to get rid of that, get past that, and we got to have successful men, you know, out on the forefront. And that's part of what gatekeepers, you know, that's part of what gatekeepers is about. It's about having strong men. So our goal is to have 100 strong men. We're going to turn that 100 strong black men into 1,000, 1,000 to 10,000. You know what I mean? But it starts with one. Everything starts with just one.
And I guess the second part of that caller's question is, what are you personally planning on doing to help push that along?
Well, man, just keep with the, like I said, keep with the plan. You know, as much time as I can give to it, to that, to those kind of programs, and anybody who I could reach, and or anybody who I could help get an understanding about, you know, the things that I consider to be important, I'm gonna help do that. And that's how I started. You know what I mean? I started from in my household. I mean, my kids. I teach this to my kids. You know my beliefs and my thoughts. I teach my kids. You know, try to have them have an understanding of why I think like I do. It starts in your house, and you take it outside, which is just my everyday life, you know. So that's what I could do to try to help, you know, with that. I just got to keep doing what I'm doing already.
Most definitely. Call it
1-633. Do you have any more questions or comments?
No, I don't have any other comments. Just want to acknowledge that this is a very informative session tonight, and I'm glad to be here.
Awesome.
Thank you.
I guess 1-633, I do got a question for you. I guess, you know, before this call tonight, were you aware of the different voting issues that are going to be taking place there in Joliet in the state of Illinois? And then two, you know, have you prepared yourself to be able to go out there and cast your vote to make that difference?
Yes, I have been informed and actually very involved with the political process out in Joliet at this time. And I made sure that I wasn't not only registered to vote, but was doing my part to make sure other individuals got registered to vote. And we're just looking at who should be the individual that we're going to be backing at this time, because the work not only needs to be done, it needs to be done now.
100%. I agree with you. And thank you for your input and shedding light on that, and continue the great work that you're doing. I think, you know, like I said, like our guest said today, and like I continue to say, you know, Carl will back me on this. You know, I know he said it multiple times tonight. You know, it starts with, you know, the first person. It starts with ourselves and making a difference in ourselves. What do you think about that, Carl?
Yeah, I think I definitely think that's what it is. You know? And I think that's what it always is. It's gonna always start. It always starts with you, no matter what it is. You know what I mean? It always starts with you, how you look at yourself. And then in a reflection that you see, how you reflect that, you know, onto other people. So it's all about your understanding.
100%. And then, Michonne, do you have any questions?
I do want to see Adal. 516-531-9540 and press 1. I wanted to see if any of the listeners had any questions or comments that they wanted to make. And also, what is the date, Carl, of the election?
April 6th.
April 6th.
April 6th. April 6th is the date for the election, but actually, people can request their mail-in ballots as early as, I think, the first week of March. You can request your mail-in ballots, and people could do their mail-in ballots if they don't want to go outside. Still a little bit of corona hanging around, so.
Now, do they have early voting there for this?
Yep. Early voting starts, I believe. Don't quote me on this, but I believe it's February to early voting starts.
Yeah. Early voting is very important. Yeah, I mean,
early voting
hey,
is very important.
Yeah, get out there and vote early. You know, as some would say, get out there and vote early and often, right? You know, but you know, in reality, you know, early voting is very important. You know, that way, we're not waiting, we're not procrastinating this vote. We show with early voting. You know, we show one how important a vote is. Two, we show that we're dedicated. We're dedicated to making sure our voices are being heard, because, you know, if we wait to the last second, obviously, you know, anything can pop up. Anything can pop up, you know, and we might say, oh, well, this came up. I didn't even get to vote this time around. Every vote matters. Every vote counts. And the moment that we stop believing that is when, you know, we let the other side take over. And we let the other side win. So, like, we definitely got to get out there and vote. We got another caller, 6063. You are live on the air.
No, that was me. I got knocked off.
Okay.
I lost the signal, so I'm back.
Okay. Gotcha.
Hey, but just real quick, man, with the before we go past the voting thing, we have a few candidates, man, and we all are trying to put together a inner ballot like coalition. We have a, and I was trying to not to say anybody's name incorrectly, but it's a few key roles. Hold on 1 second. Give me 1 second. So we have Elvis Madison, who's running for Park District Supervisor. We have Nicole Lurie, she's running for city council. We have Ken Harris, he's running for DuPage Township. And then me, Carl Farrell, running for Joliet Township for the trustee position. I'm trying to think who else works with us. Oh, we got Cesar Guerrero. He's also running for city council. It's three seats out here. It's three seats out here. That they run for us, like 12 candidates. But these are all the people that are working with me in different ways to try to bring change. And we're going to put together an awareness campaign to raise to raise awareness of the importance of this vote within our Black and Brown community. So that's what we're doing together.
I guess, you know, with Joliet having, you know, not even just Joliet, but the state of Illinois, you know, having this vote coming up, I guess you say the vote, just remind me, and then to also the callers, when is Election Day?
April 6th.
April 6th.
Election Day.
So, and then when does early voting start?
Early voting starts. But I can give you a specific date. Let me get the date for the early voting and for the ballot, which I should already know. Early voting and the mail-in ballot. As a matter of fact, I think you can go on the website now, the county website, and request your mail-in ballot.
Okay, I have a question. Can a felon in Illinois vote?
Most definitely a felon in Illinois can vote. As a matter of fact, we also trying to get something together where we can go to, okay, so a felon that's in custody, a felon in custody that's in prison, no. Mm-hmm. If you're in prison, no, you can't vote. But if you're a felon and you're out of prison and you on parole, or, you know what I mean, whatever, yeah, you can vote. You have voting rights.
Is there anything they got to do for that, or can they just go in and vote?
Nah, you just register to vote. Go vote.
That's awesome.
And we're trying to raise awareness. People who are incarcerated had a right to vote, like, but not if you already been, if you've been found guilty, right? So if you already, if you're fighting a case and you're in the county and custody of the county here, you have a right to vote. So we're trying to get something together now where we can somehow get into the county and get to the prisoners and make sure that that the inmates in the county are able to vote this coming election.
I do have a question for you, Carl. One of my favorite politicians right now today is Bernie Sanders. I'm a huge Bernie Sanders fan. That's me. It's a little bit. It's just to inform you on my thought process there. One of the things that Bernie Sanders supports is voting rights. Period. That means whether you're locked up, where you're not locked up, whether you're fighting a case, whether you're not fighting a case. If you're a United States citizen, you have a right to vote. Period. How do you feel about that?
I definitely feel like you should have a right to vote. Period. You know, in some states, like I know for a fact in Minnesota, if you're a felon, you can't vote. You don't have any voting rights. So, you know, it's different state by state. But yeah, you should definitely have voting rights. So at least it should be a process to be able to get your rights back. You know.
100%. And like, I don't live in Joliet anymore. Well, I never lived in Joliet. I have family who live in Joliet. I don't live in Illinois anymore, but I do have a lot of family and friends who do. What can we do to try to pass legislation that supports Bernie Sanders' stance on people being in that are incarcerated, whether it be federal or state, the right to vote? What could we do to like try to push that narrative forward?
Okay, early voting. I was wrong. It wasn't 26. Early voting starts February 25th, and a million ballots will be mailed out. Yeah, also on February 25th. And if you're in Joliet, you could go on the county clerk website. But to answer your question, as far as what we could do, people need to find out whoever they senator, whatever district, whoever the senator is for their district, or their state rep, or both, they need to call them. You could call your senator and, you know what I'm saying, and say yes or no, tell them to vote yes or no to something. So I suggest people, you know, that should be common knowledge too, that when it's things that people won't change, that's outside of the city, you know what I mean, outside of the city government, you can call your senator. That's what they are there for. These are the people who, you know, you're supposed to vote in or vote out. So call your senator, ask them for change, call your state rep, ask them for change, and keep calling. You can call them 100 times a day until they know your name personally, you know, if you want to. If you want some change, those are the people that's supposed to represent you and your change that you want. Outside of that, get a group of people together, have those people call too. Also, you know, like-minded people. You got 10 people to think of, like, calling your senator. You know, you're going to have to take into consideration what you're saying, what you're asking for. So that's a start.
Awesome.
You're not getting the change that you want, you get your change that you want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Rashad, you have some more questions, comments?
What is your vision for Joliet?
They just asked me that question at a forum a couple of weeks ago. My vision is I want black and brown people to have a bigger share in the equity out here. I want to see our communities rebuilt some of the communities haven't been touched since the 60s. You know what I mean? So I want to see our communities rebuild. I want to see, I would like to see, because Joliet is a huge hub for shipping and receiving. It's a huge, it has the largest shipping and receiving hub in the Midwest. So that means it's a lot of warehouses out there. I would like to see those warehouses get unionized and organized. And then that would be like the strongest union in the Midwest if they could organize those union workers. It will also give better jobs to the people in the community, so that the temp service, it'll give some stability. And people would be able to do more financially if they had, you know, a different sense of stability. And since those are the jobs that are available out here, then it only makes sense we try to make it better. Like, that's part of making it better for the people that are out here. So that's the goal. I want the east side of the bridge to be, you know, the same as the west side of the bridge, as far as with the parks, as far as with the schooling, as far as with the community, and the jobs, the opportunities that are available, the sense of hope, the sense of pride, you know. That's my bit. That's what we trying to change. I want to get it to that.
And then to those who are listening right now, especially those in Joliet, like that last caller that we just had, what do you pledge if elected into your position? What do you pledge to do? What changes can you promise right now that you will push forward in your position?
I can promise not just from my whole entire slate, because the Democratic slate that's running for Joliet Township, we have kind of the same ideology, right? So we want to see the right programs in place. We want to see the right programs in place to help the community with the assistance that they need. We want the community to be able to have accessible knowledge to these programs, so they don't have to look around for help when it's there for them. We want to make sure that money is allocated to the right places, that any contracts that come through, we want them to be local businesses who are awarded those contracts. And so that's what we can say. That's going to be a difference. Once we get in there, we're going to make sure that, you know, the knowledge is out there and it's available, that there is help, you know, and we're going to be there to help.
And then I guess my next question to you is, I know you said that as far as, and we have about like 90 seconds left, you know, but I know you said like, you know, getting the assistance that people need. What do you think at the end of the day that Joliet needs the most? Like when you say the assistance that people need and that having it readily available, but they don't have to go searching, you know, for this assistant. What is that assistant that you think that Joliet needs the most?
Well, the assistance that I think that they're going to need for the township, especially coming out of this pandemic, I think people are going to need, man, it's going to have to be, people are going to need rental assistance. People are going to need, like, you know, assistance with the, just with housing, period, things of that nature. But if you're saying, like, what Joliet just needs in general, I think just more opportunity and more where it's a lot of different people. We just need more opportunity. The black and brown communities need to have the knowledge of the opportunities that are out there, as far as like with the trades or with the better careers, not so much just the jobs, you know what I mean? So diversity. So it needs to be a little bit more diversity in general.
And then my last question for you is that I know earlier we were talking about the marijuana industry and how strong the marijuana industry can be, especially in a state like Illinois. And we don't have, you know, a lot of black or brown, you know, growers or dispensaries, et cetera. And a large reason for that is because a strong barrier of entry to it. What can you / the Democratic Party do to try to slice that barrier entry in? Because to my understanding, you need $1 million to get started, you know, and in most black and brown communities, you know, we can't gather $1 million. It's like, hey, even if my family wanted to help out, even if we wanted to pitch in and we want to put our money together to do this. We just don't have enough. What can you guys do to make that more accessible to the black and brown community?
Well, we could keep getting these, talking to the senators, man, and try to get them to find ways around that, because it could be done. I mean, it could be done even, you know, even if it's suggested in some of the resolutions, some of the marijuana tax resolutions, even if those monies, if some of those monies are used to as grant monies for the black, you know what I mean, for the black companies or the black dispensaries that want to open up, we should be able through talks and through talking and understanding and be able to find some kind of resolution that could maybe encompass that. There is a way, because there's money there, so there can be a way to waive the fee, you know, or change the fee or pull some money from somewhere else to cover that fee. It just has to be understood. It got to be the right thing said, you know, at the right time and with the right agreement, and it can happen. So it's just finding that. But
so do you know if you and the Democratic Party are looking to do that? I mean, obviously, we're saying it could be, but like, what is being done to make that happen?
Yeah, it's talks. It's people talking already about it. That's already in Springfield. You know, they're already talking about that. It's people already working on that. So it's just, you know, when will they come up with a resolution? Sometimes those talks, you know, sometimes they take time, but yeah, people have been, they already been working on that for at least the last year and a half, couple of years. You know, ever since he got legalized, it's been about a year and a half now, right?
I believe it was legalized in 2019, if I'm not mistaken.
19. Yeah. So
I think the bill passed in 2019, and then I think it took effect in 2020. Correct.
2020, right? So they just now dispersing some of the first, you know, the money. The money's just starting to get dispersed for the fact.